You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. To some, he was an unlikely choice to run the Los Angeles Dodgers. Those questions were effectively answered definitively when they went out and won the 1988 World Series right after he took over. They haven't won one since. The story of how he rose to the occasion is a fascinating one, and as Nora used to say, give credit where credit is due. We welcome back to MLB.com someone who made so many countless valuable contributions to this company, Fred Clair. It's a joy to have you on the show. But most importantly, Fred, from one cancer survivor to another, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Well, Ed, good to be with you, and thank you for asking. And I'm doing better. I've had quite a journey, as many cancer patients and survivors know. It's really been a journey of about a year, but I'm now on a immunotherapy program at the City of Hope in Duarte, California, just east of Los Angeles, and the program seems to be working. I'm feeling better, regaining strength, and so I'm very positive about my outlook and forever grateful to the City of Hope and the wonderful people who compose the City of Hope.
I know that you're fighting jaw and neck cancer, and which has just returned. And that's the thing about cancer, Fred. It's just so insidious.
Well, it is, Ed. And the cancer that I have, squamous cell carcinoma, one doctor described it as a very nasty cancer. I feel positive. And in the journey, as difficult as it is, you gain a lot. And what I want to do, what I'm driven to do now, is to help the City of Hope and help people in the future who will face the challenge of cancer. And in that regard, I'm going to have a tournament in Glendale, California on August the 14th to help raise funds for the City of Hope, because you can't walk in there every day for nearly a year now and not be impacted by what you see and the people who are there and the need that's being served.
It's so good, the work that you're doing. Once upon a time, a long time ago, you were a sports writer covering the Angels and the Dodgers for the Long Beach Press-Telegram. Was that your ambition growing up, to be a writer?
No, my ambition, Ed, was to somehow, some way, be involved with sports. I loved baseball as a youngster. I loved basketball. But when my parents took me to Crosley Field to see the Cincinnati Reds play my brother's favorite team, the St. Louis Cardinals, when I was probably 11 or 12, when I first saw Crosley Field, I knew where I wanted to spend my life. And so it was a matter of how I would be able to spend my life related to sports, and writing was my path, and that ultimately led to a chance to join the Los Angeles Dodgers in publicity in 1969, which ultimately led to a position in publicity as the publicity director of the Dodgers at that time. So that began my journey in baseball.
And I was going to ask you, how did you go from sports writing to the Dodgers? How were you made aware of an opening there?
Well, the legendary executive, legendary certainly of those who know the work that he did, Arthur Red Patterson, who started his career with the Yankees and joined the Dodgers.
The man who walked off Mickey Mantle's 565-foot home run, my friend.
Oh, yes, and so many more achievements other than walking off the length of Mantle's home run. But Red got into a disagreement. Red was a man who was a wonderful, wonderful man, but he was redheaded and he had a temper. And so that disagreement led to an opening in publicity, and that ultimately led to I was covering the team. I had gotten to know the Dodgers in spring training that year, to know the O'Malleys, Mr. and Mrs. O'Malley, Al Campanis, Bill Schweppe, Red Patterson, Walt Alston is the manager, and great, great coaches, and Monty Bazgall and Red Adams, and really legendary people, and just being in that environment and seeing what the Dodgers were all about. In spring training, we were still in the barracks at Dodger Town in Vero Beach, and the closeness of all of that. And when the opening came up, we were to leave on a road trip. We were going to leave on a long road trip to the east. And I read a letter saying that if they were going to be interviewing for this position, a publicity director, I would certainly appreciate being considered for the job. And that led to my position with the Dodgers as publicity director. And then from there, when Red left then to join the Dodgers, to join the Angels as president of the Angels, that led to my promotion as the vice president of public relations and marketing. And from there, of course, I went on to executive vice president and then executive vice president and general manager when Al Campanis was asked, sadly, to resign his position in 1987.
And I was just going to get to that. The GM of the Dodgers, the legendary Alex Campanis, goes on Nightline and incinerates his great career, saying, in effect, African-Americans lacked, in his words, the necessities to hold significant positions in the game like manager or general manager. At this time, you're, Fred, serving essentially as his assistant. Where were you when this disaster took place?
Well, this was opening day of the 1987 season. The Dodgers were playing in Houston, and what happened was no one had any awareness that Al was going to go on this show. He hadn't told anyone. So after watching the Dodger game on television, then, of course, Al went on to the Nightline program, I guess on ABC. I had no awareness that he was on. So I had no awareness of what had transpired until I picked up the paper, the Los Angeles Times, the next morning. And I can still see the story running in the column on the far right and reading the quotes or what was attributed to Al, and just really being in both very shocked and very sad to see Al's statements. So I was at home. Again, Al had not told anyone he was going on the show. And it was a very sad chapter in the history of the Dodgers as far as Al's career, because he had contributed so much for so many years.
And then owner Peter O'Malley, who really has no choice here to retain Alex Campanis, calls you into his office. And what happens?
Well, he called me actually from Houston. There were two calls, Ed. Peter called, I believe, from the airport, and he said to me, "Fred, Al has given his resignation, and you have to take this job." And then Al got on the phone, and he said, "Fred, I wish you had been with me last night." And I said, "Al, I wish you had told me that you were going to be on that show." And I think that what happened there, Ed, is that, and the people who knew Al and knew his contributions and his involvement with Jackie Robinson.
He was at the forefront of the civil rights movement baseball.
But in this case, Ed, and it's an important point in Al's career and his legacy. He was asked a question: why aren't there more minorities in top positions in baseball? And Al made the grave mistake of trying to defend his beloved game of baseball, where there really was no defense. The same questions can be asked today and deserve an answer. Progress has been made, but more progress needs to be made. But in any case, Al was asked to resign, and then when the Dodgers came back to Los Angeles for the opening day, the next day after the third game in Houston, Peter again called me into his office early in the morning, and I said, Peter, I'd be happy to serve as the general manager. If you want me on a committee to select a general manager, I will be happy to do that. But if I do accept the role as the general manager, I certainly want it understood that I have full, complete authority, because I knew that in that position, authority has to be recognized for everybody's point of view to who has the responsibility. And Peter and I shook hands, and I had the position of the general manager. And when the press came to Peter, they said, how long will Fred have this position? And he said, he has it today. And so that was good enough for me. I was fortunate to be able to serve 12 seasons as the general manager of the Dodgers. And, of course, the 1988 season still ranks as certainly the most memorable year.
The voice is so distinctive. We're so happy to have Fred Clear with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. You took over certainly with a lot of tension in the air in the city of Los Angeles. Is it true, Fred, that you didn't have a contract when you got started?
No, I didn't have a contract. The Dodgers, it's interesting, Ed, in those days, the Dodgers, other than the manager and the coaches, the front office, for the most part, did not have contracts. But what we did have was continuity. When you look back and see that, whether it's the role of general manager or farm director or ticket manager or stadium operations, people served for 15 years, 20 years, 20 years plus. I mean, it was a legendary organization in terms of the continuity. It was just remarkable because of a sense of loyalty and because of the wonderful ownership and leadership of the O'Malley family.
You installed regular conference calls throughout the organization with everybody, scouts, the minor league personnel. Was that unprecedented? Was that something that started with you?
I think it did, Ed, in terms of the dedication to that type of environment and what I wanted to achieve, because what I really wanted to do was to call upon the expertise that existed in the Dodger organization. So every week I would have a call with our minor league managers. I would have calls, as my scouts or the scouts knew, with Mel Didier and Phil Regan and Steve Boros and Jerry Stevenson and others, probably 2 to 3 times a week, because I wanted the input. And furthermore, I wanted the people in the organization to know that their voices would be heard, that they would have a chance to give their viewpoint. And my philosophy was to gain the information, to have the expertise from these people who had served for so many years and who had great expertise, and then ultimately to be able to make the decision and then to take the responsibility for that decision.
And this was probably unprecedented, Fred. You hired an analytics expert way before it became popular.
Well, Ed, you've done your research, because that's absolutely right. I hired Craig Wright, who was really a forerunner to all that has taken place in the game in terms of the analytical viewpoint, because what my goal was to gain the best information that I could find, whether it came from the manager or from the coaches, or whether it came from a minor league pitching coach, our scouts, to have all of that at hand. So when you're making an evaluation, that you have the best information that you can possibly have to be able to make that decision. And then again, as I said, I think what's very important is to take the responsibility. And when the decision or a trade or a move works well, to give credit to those people who were involved And I say that from the standpoint of what you really want to do in an organization is to build the strength within the organization. And, you know, I gained great respect for Theo Epstein and really enjoyed his remarks after the Cubs won, because here's Theo doing this very same thing in terms of crediting his minor league people, in terms of crediting former players, in terms of crediting his staff. And I really gained a lot of respect for Theo, because that's really what it's all about in any baseball organization, is a collective effort.
Fred Clair is with us. You made a lot of personnel moves. The most noted ones, you took John Shelby out of Baltimore's minor league system and you made him your center fielder. And then you signed two guys with a whole lot of passion. Mickey Hatcher, who could play all around the field, and catcher Rick Dempsey. And then in late January, you signed Kirk Gibson during the winter of collusion. And who else was competing for Gibson's services, or was anybody, because collusion was taking place?
It was a very complicated time, as you know, in terms of making a move, because with the collusion overhanging everything at the winter meetings in 87, I actually tried to trade for Kirk and discussions with a great baseball man and a dear friend, the late Bill LaJoy. And it was so complicated. It was very difficult as far as what was going to happen. And I was ready to move ahead. And actually, we at that time were in the forefront, too, in the front office in terms of having a team lawyer, Sam Fernandes. But anyway, it got very complicated, and I think Bill became frustrated with the overhang of all the technicalities of what might happen related to the overhanging collusion. But then when Kirk was declared a free agent, then I moved quickly because I, with the reports, and I recall a very strong report from one of our scouts, Dale McReynolds, who had seen Kirk in college, and the report that he had given in the way he had followed Kirk, that that was really, Kirk became someone that I felt could have an impact on our team and move quickly. Who else was there? I have no idea, and I really didn't care because I was dedicated to signing Kirk Gibson.
You obviously felt, and forgive me for speaking for you, but you obviously felt your team lacked fire. So bringing in Hatcher, bringing in Dempsey, bringing in Gibson changed the culture.
Well, it was part of what I always look for in a player, Kirk, the passion of a player. And you have cited three players who really played prominent roles, two players who had been released. Hatcher was the first move that I made. I knew Mickey from his first his earlier days with the Dodgers. On my second day on the job, I released Jerry Royce, a dear friend today. We owed Jerry $1 million, which was a lot of money in those days.
Yes, it was.
Payroll. And signed Mickey Hatcher. Then Rick Dempsey had been run over by Bo Jackson at the end of the 87 season, and it looked like his career was buried. But I knew Rick and knew about Rick and knew the competitive fire of Rick. So there were two players where it looked like their careers may be over and who went on to play very significant roles for us in 1988. And, of course, Kirk was a high-profile player. But they did have the common bond, Ed, of really being dedicated, competitive players who really had that strong desire to do whatever it takes to win, and that's certainly what appealed to me.
And you signed Mike Davis, formerly from the Oakland A's. There's no Kirk Gibson home run without Michael Davis walking with two outs in the ninth inning to allow Gibson to come up and bat. Where were you when Gibson was at the plate?
I was in my box at Dodger Stadium on certainly what now is going down in history is a very memorable moment, a time, point in time. And when Kirk hit the home run, it was one of the strangest things I've ever seen at Dodger Stadium. Kirk hits the home run. I mean, the stadium clearly goes wild. And there was no need for me to go down to congratulate Kirk. There were plenty of congratulations coming his way. I left my box. I walked along the club level at Dodger Stadium. I have never seen anything like it. There was no one other than me walking down the aisle. Everyone remained standing their seats on the club level. I walked down the club level. The guard opened the door to the offices right there, got my briefcase to head home, went to the parking lot. At that point, it seemed like there was no one in the parking lot. It almost seemed like a dream. Nothing was moving, and the sound was bouncing off of everything and everywhere. And I drove out of the parking lot. I seemed to be the only car driving out of the parking lot at that time, and headed home to Pasadena, just 10 miles away, realizing and recognizing that we had just had a moment in time that would probably in baseball never be forgotten.
Fred Clair with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. After you won the World Series, Rick Dempsey gave you the ball that Oral Hershiser used to strike out the last batter in the upset of the Oakland Athletics. And you being the man that you are, eventually donated that to the Baseball Hall of Fame. You're known as the guy who traded Pedro Martinez, but he has told me himself, Fred, that there were a lot of voices in the Dodger organization who thought he was too small to succeed, and that nobody could have ever envisioned the Hall of Fame career that lay ahead.
Well, Ed, Pedro is a special guy, special player, special person, as was his brother Ramon, as is his family. And so the trade, I mean, that's nice of Pedro to say. And Dr. Job said to the press, because in one meeting, Dr. Job questioned whether Pedro would be able to have a successful career because he felt that he could be prone to injuries. And but the fact is, Ed, and it goes back to what I said earlier, the record is right. I did trade Pedro, and will forever certainly regret that, but with great respect for Pedro and our relationship. And I texted Pedro and we exchanged messages when they went into the Hall of Fame. And he was very, very kind in his remarks. So he is deserving of the greatest recognition in the Hall of Fame status because he is certainly that and more. And so I really enjoy the relationship that I've had with Pedro and Ramon and the Martinez family.
The Dodgers were in desperate need of a second baseman, and on the day of the trade, you got a good one in Delino DeShields. You remain with the ball club. The club is eventually sold to Fox, and one night they get this bright idea to trade Mike Piazza without your knowledge. And you eventually went public that this was not your deal, that these were television executives. I believe the man's name was Chase Carey, who was involved in the move to send Piazza to the Florida Marlins, as they were then called.
That's absolutely right. I received a call from Bob Graziano, then the president of the Dodgers, after Fox had taken over, and he said, Fred, there's a trade that needs to be announced, and he told me what was involved in the trade of Gary Sheffield and Bobby Bonilla coming to the Dodgers with Jim Eisenreich and Mike and Todd Zeal going to the Marlins. And that trade needs to be announced tonight. And I said, well, Bob, then there will be two announcements tonight. Because after the trade is announced, I will announce my resignation. Because you don't need me. To have somebody make this trade without my knowledge is about as detrimental as anything can be to our baseball organization. And I went back to my office and received a call from Derek Hall, then our publicity director, and now, of course, the president of the Diamondbacks. who said, Fred, the trade can't be announced tonight because Sheffield has a no-trade contract. And I said, of course he has a no-trade contract. Every general manager in baseball knows that. I thought that they had resolved that when they said there had been a trade made. So I certainly wasn't going to walk away with the mess that had landed on my desk. But I did go public because I was always candid with the news media and with the fans and straightforward in terms of what had happened and told exactly how that trade had taken place and learned very quickly that the Fox people were not happy with me at all to state the facts of the case and that I was going to be terminated in very short order because of the way that I handled the announcement. And I said that may be true, but that's the way any announcement should be handled. That's the way we did it. That's the way the Dodgers have done it for as long as I know, and I've been here for 30 years. And that then marked what was to be the end of my Dodger career on June 21st. Sadly, the day that Al Campanis passed away, I received notice to come back to Dodger Stadium for a meeting that evening. And was told that I was being replaced and that Tommy Lasorda would be the interim manager. So it was the end of a 30-year career with the Dodgers, Ed, but with great, great memories of that time with the Dodgers and feeling very fortunate for the career that I had and the opportunities that I had.
How gracious of you to say that. You walked away without any regrets. And, Fred, it's been 30 years, and they've not won a World Series since you left.
Well, I'm hopeful that will change this year, Ed, and they have a very, very good club, and it's indeed, it's time, and I certainly will be cheering for that victory. It's long overdue, and hopefully that mark will change this season.
To your good health, Fred. So that'll do it for Fred Clare and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.